I knew that, if I didn't have to rest it out.
We're here on Daf Kuf Ches Amud Beis. We're almost up to the Mishnah. There's a little piece of Gemara here before the Mishnah that we didn't get to. Rav Zutre. Here you'll see it if you count up from the Mishnah. Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. Boy, Rabba Zute Boila. Boila Hach. So what we have here is Rabba Zute. That was his name. Usually Zute means the younger one or perhaps the less of a great scholar. Sometimes it's indicative of humility. In any event, he had a suffix in these dinim, and we discussed these dinim before. We'll see how his suffix relates to those dinim. Nignava bi'ones. So he's talking about a case of a shomer who's obviously responsible to guard the object, and it was stolen. But it was stolen ba'ones. Now, what does that mean, it was stolen ba'ones? If we're talking about a shomer chinam, it means that he provided a basic level of shmira, and you don't have to introduce onus here. It doesn't mean onus. Onus usually means circumstances beyond his control. In the case of a shomer chinam, he could have done even more to make sure that the object would not be stolen, but he's not obligated to do so. So the language onus here I find a little bit difficult. It would make sense if we're talking about a shomer sachar. A shomer sachar is chayev for gneva. And if he's chayev for gneva, then it's important that we talk about a case of onus. Here he says, the Tosa Rosh says that the suffix of Rabbah, this Rabbah Zuti, is in a case of a shomer sachar. And what led the Tosa Rosh to that conclusion that we're talking about a shomer sachar? He says, Lakach, therefore, nokat nignava ba'ones. Shezel pturo shel shomer sachar. When is it possible for a shomer sachar to be potur in a case of gneva? It would have to be a case of a gneva ba'ones. Because if it's not a case of onus, then a shomer sachar is chayev for gneva. Why is a shomer sachar chayev for gneva?
That's why he's paid.
It's got a high level, because he has to provide a higher level of shmira. And that shmira has to protect against gneva. Which means he has to do whatever he has to do in order to prevent against gneva. The Gemara speaks about Mos. If he, let's say, for example, he's a shomer sachar watching someone's cash, someone's currency. So he has to dig into the ground to make sure that the ganav won't find it. That's the responsibility. Now the next question is, okay, the shomer sachar has to provide a higher level of shmira in order to guarantee that the object won't be stolen. Why? And that's what Zev says, because he's being paid for that. He's being paid for that. Now, one of the fundamental questions in shmira in general is, does the payment automatically engender a chiyuv of a higher level of shmira? Or does he have to accept upon himself, the shomer, that higher level of shmira? For example, what's going to be in a case where the shomer says, okay, I'm very happy that you're paying me, but I don't want to accept the higher level of shmira. Is he halachically bound to accept a shmira ma'ula? Or can he set up this condition and say to the mafkid, look, if you want to pay me, that's up to you. I'd be very happy if you paid me, but I'm not willing to provide a shmira of a higher level. I want the shmira of a shomer chinam. I'm not going to protect against gneva. So this is a mishnah in Masechta Bava Metzia called Masne Shomer Sachar Lios Kishomer Chinam. That in effect a shomer sachar could change the rules of the game, and he can accept upon himself shmira of a shomer chinam, even though he's being paid for a shmira. Again, the mafkid could back out of the deal and say, if that be the case, I don't want to pay you. That's for sure his right. But even if he is receiving the money, the Shomer Socher could still say, I don't want to accept this higher level of Shmira. And the Gemara there asks the following question. We have a principle called Eino de Masne al Masha Kosev Batorah. A person doesn't have, the Torah doesn't give you that flexibility to change the rules of the game. And the Gemara gives examples. You can't marry a woman and make a tenai that she won't be able to collect Sher Ksus V'yona, or you can't borrow money and do away with the Shemitah law that at the end of the 7 years the Chov is cancelled. You don't have the ability to change those laws. Let's say, for example, I sell you an object and it's only worth 10 in the market, and I sell it to you for 15, which is called what?
Onah.
Can I sell it to you and say, well, I'm making a condition here that you won't claim Onah against me? So the Gemara basically sets up the following principle, that with regard to a Dover Shebe Isur, that which touches on marriage relationships, for example, you don't have any flexibility to change the Torah law. It's set in stone. And Masa Mashakosu B'Torah, tonight against the Torah law, is Batel. But with regard to Dini Mominos, with monetary law, for example, the law is that if I lend you money, you don't have to pay me for 30 days. Right, that's Stam Milva Shloshim Yom. But if I make a condition with you, and I'm saying I'm willing to lend you the money, but I want to be paid in 2 weeks' time, the Gemara says Tanai Shavimamon Kayam. Then in such a case, the Tanai is valid. And if we swing back to the case of a Shomer Sachar, it's not necessarily so that the Shomer Sachar is Chayav for Gneva. He has to accept upon himself that Chiyuv Shmira. If he doesn't accept it upon himself and he refuses to, and he says, I'm willing to be a shomer, but I don't want to live up to the conditions and the requirements of the Torah, he can do that. He can make such a tenai. Masne shomer sachal, yiske shomer chinam. What actually clinches his chiyuv shmira on this higher level of a shmira ma'ula? And Chazal say, the very moment that the object enters into his rishus, which means that he has to do a certain kind of a kinyan, whether it's a kinyan meshicha, whether it's a kinyan chatzer, some sort of a kinyan that clinches this achrayus, this responsibility, which is not just a moral responsibility, but it's a monetary responsibility. And whenever there's a monetary responsibility, there has to be some sort of a kinyan. Because anything that's monetary has to be clinched, it has to be effectuated by a kinyan. Now, if the Shomer Socher says nothing in the absence of any tnai, then we assume that since he's being paid, he accepts upon himself this higher level of shmir. So he's chayev now for gneva. If that be the case, Rabbi Zute is going to talk about a case where the Shomer, even though he's being paid, and even though it was stolen, he doesn't have to pay for that. So that's why Rabbi Zuthi has to add another important word here. What word is that?
Onus.
But I don't understand. Torah hiva lilmad ani tzarech. What do you mean onus? A shomer socher is chayav for gneva, which by definition means that it's not onus because he's potter for onsen. So if, let's say, for example, you give me an animal and you pay me to watch it, and the animal dies, I'm not chayav to pay you for that. That's called onus. But I'm chayev if it's stolen. Logically, I have to conclude that stealing is not called onus. So what does he mean, nigav bonus?
So as long as you take every precaution that is more than reasonable, then that's okay. And if it still gets stolen, then you're not, then it's onus.
But again, the halacha operates with the following premise. You may want to know why and how this works out, but the premise is that if it was stolen, it's not an onus, meaning you could have done even more. Like, for example, you lock it up in a safe and he breaks through the safe. You're chayav for that. That's not considered onus. What do you say?
If you lock up the animal in the barn, okay, right, and someone comes at night and breaks open the door and things, right? Okay, that's not an onus. If someone comes with machine guns, and
excellent.
Say, right.
Okay, now you're
your money or your life. You know.
Correct. So what's that called in the language of Shas?
Listim
Mizuyim. So if you look at the Tosa Rashi, he says that Kavanas Rava, what Rava means to say here, in the case of Gneva Baonis, is Nignav al Yidei Listim Mizuyan. And Listim Mizuyan is called Gneva Baonis. Now, here, there's a very interesting comment here. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says listim mizuyan. Where's the Rashi? Just 1 second. Im shomer sachar hu afal gav de potur be listim mizuyan. Okay, so Rashi himself says that a listim mizuyan is potur shomer sachar is potur be listim mizuyan. And what would you say, Rabbi Osai, at the point in which this object was stolen with an armed robbery, what happens? Does anything change over here? We said that when the object goes into the Rishus of the Shomer, he makes a kinyan, and he's responsible for the object. What happens now that the object was stolen with an armed robbery situation? What would you say happens? What? Okay, for sure he doesn't have to pay, but is anything beyond that?
But does he have to go and try and get it back?
What I would say is, and tell me if you intuitively agree with me, that at the very point that the object was stolen, if he's not responsible for that Gneva, because it was a Gneva Ballista Mizuyan, his status as a Shomer, I mean his original Kinyan, which engendered a Chiva Chrayas, is completely terminated. That's what I would call in Lomdish jargon, you would call it Hafkas Achrayus. Mm-hmm. Normally Hafkas Achrayus requires a Hashava. But in a case where he doesn't have the possibility of Hashava, because it was stolen, and it was stolen in a listed Mizuyan scenario which exempts him from any sort of responsibility, that's called Ones, I would say at that point he ceases to be a Shomer. But now let's look at the next few words in the Gemara. And the Gemara seems to reject what I thought was correct. And the Gemara says, Hechzir ha-ganov bebeis ha-shomer. The Ganov, I guess he had second thoughts about this whole thing. Maybe he's regretting his crime. He returns the object back to whom? To the Shomer. Now, Rabosai, at this point, does the Shomer have any responsibility vis-a-vis this object?
No.
I would say no. Why would I? What logic would compel me to say no? Once it was stolen, hafkas achrayus. If we apply hafkas shmir, hafkas achrayus, then okay, they kind of put it back in my rishus. But I was not at that point willing to take upon myself a chiyuv shmira. So again, what I'm suggesting is the following. I have two premises, and one of them has to be wrong, and the question is which one is wrong. My first premise is, and I'm not willing to budge on this one, is that when a shomer receives an object for shmira, he willingly, what's called bedas, accepts upon himself a chiyuv shmira. Okay, chiyuv shmira requires him to, in the case of a shomer sof, to beef up the level of shmira that he provides, and if the object is stolen, he's chayav. That's premise number one. That's, I think, a pretty solid premise. Premise number two is that once the object was taken out of his rishus ba'ones, at that point, he can no longer be chayav and hashava. Why? Because he doesn't have access to the object. You can't expect him to return the object. And this reality that he doesn't have access to the object is not a fault of his own. So it goes beyond this level of achrayus. If you accept these two premises, that the chiyuv hashava is no longer in place, it's no longer in effect. Why? Because the object was taken out of his rishus. Then at that point, if his shmira is terminated, then in order to impose upon him another shmira, and now we go back to our first premise, what do we need again? We need his das. He has to willingly accept upon himself shmira. Now the Ganav returns, I'll be right with you, Mike. I just want to show you where I get confused here in this sugya, and you'll help me get out of the confusion. But this is what was bothering me this morning. If the Ganav decides that he's going to return the object to the shomer, it would seem to me logically that the shomer says, that's a brand new parasha of shmira. The old parasha of shmira terminated the very moment that it was stolen and taken out of my rishus. Now you want to start with a new parsha of Shmira. The Shomer has a right to say, thanks but no thanks, I don't want to accept upon myself this Shmira. Go ahead, Mike.
That's not, I agree with everything you said up to the last sentence. That's not true. It's as though he's found an object, and you have, and he's like a Shomer Chinam, and he has to return it to the Baal.
Amidin Shomer Chinam, you want to say?
Yeah. Yes, that's,
let me think about that. That's a brilliant chap. I didn't think maybe he has a din of a Shomer Aveda.
Yeah.
One second. Maybe he has a din of a Shomer Aveda. I'll tell you why I think I have a problem with that. It's a brilliant idea. The problem is that even a Shomer Aveda has to do something to engender this responsibility. What do I mean? The Torah says that if I see a lost object, I'm not allowed to look the other way. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to turn the other way. That's called Lo Sucha Lis Alin. Mm-hmm. But yet, I'm not a Shomer on it at that point. Again, if I turn my back and I don't pick up the object, I violate a lav. Okay, it's a lav shein bo maisus, so he doesn't get malchus, but that's on the side. But nevertheless, he's not a Shomer. At what point does he become a Shomer? That's when he fulfills the mitzvah of Hashev Teshivim. And the mitzvah of Hashev Teshivim means that he takes the object into his house. Does anybody remember? Oh, Mitch, you're my man here. Oh, what's the Lashon HaPasuk? Before it says Hashev Teshivim, doesn't it say something before that? Oh, exactly. Vaveso el tof beso.
No, it's in his beso.
No, but vaveso el tof beso, meaning he's got to take it into his rishus. Meaning, I'll tell you the honest truth. If you deposit, again, here it's not you, it's the Ganon, but anyway, I'm going to blur that distinction for our purposes. But if you, the owner of the object, deposit your cow in my backyard, I'm not chayev in Shmira if I don't accept the Shomer, and there's no din of Hashavas Aveda. Okay, you might argue because there he knows exactly where his object is, so that's not really a good example. But even if, let's say, your object roams into my backyard, and you don't know where it is. So again, the law of Lo Sucha Lis Alim will apply over here. If I decide I'm not interested in Shmira, even though I saw your cow and it just ran away from you and you don't know where it is, I violate a law of Lo Sucha Lis Alim. But I'm not chayev in Hashiv Teshivim unless I take it into my house and then I become a Shomer. So even a Shomer Chinam requires Midaito to accept upon himself Achrayas. Then we would have another question, which is not a Kasha, but just a Stam, an interesting question. If this Shomer, because the God of deposited it in his backyard, becomes a Shomer Aveda, then at least according to Rabbah, not Rabbah Zuta, but Rabbah, he is a Shomer Chinam, correct? He's a Shomer Chinam. So it would be very interesting if this Ganav would return the cow to the Beis HaShomer, and then another Ganav would steal it from him, would the Shomer be chayev for that? Because even the Torah Shomer Aveda, if we hold like Rabbah, not like Rav Yosef, but if we hold like Rabbah, then he's only a Shomer Chinam. So what would be according to Rabbah now if it gets stolen a second time? If he's chayev b'Torah Shomer Aveda.
Doesn't he have enough rights to inform the owner that it was stolen?
For sure, that definitely comes under Lo Sucha Lis Alim, you know. But as far as a mamon chiyuv of shmira, such that I have to provide a positive shmira, that requires the das. I mean, that's the mitzvah that he has. But he's, you know, the financial dimension of Hashavas Aveda requires a person to willingly accept upon himself that achrayis. So let's read the Gemara Safik here. The Gemara says, "Hichsir haganav v'beis hashomer." Umesa bipshia. Now, mesa bipshia is a little bit complicated, but basically it means that this shomer, or as I would call him, the ex-shomer, but the Gemara is not willing to call him the ex-shomer, provided absolutely no shmira.
You're saying he doesn't have to.
Correct, and the Gemara is going to assume that he does have to. So we're going to have to somehow go back to the drawing board and see which one of my premises is incorrect. But be that as it may, what happened is, let's say the animal has to be fed, and that's within the responsibility of the shomer. I don't know if the shomer has to actually take the food and put it in his mouth, but he has to make the food accessible to the animal. Otherwise the animal is going to die of starvation. And that's true even for a shomer chinuch. Again, the shomer chinuch will be reimbursed for any outlays. Let's say it costs him money to provide food for the cow, but that doesn't mean a thing. He still has to provide food for the cow, otherwise the cow is going to die. This shomer decided he's not interested in being a shomer. Let the ganav do what he wants to do, but I don't have the time or the energy to feed this cow, and the cow dies. That's called mesa b'pshia. Mao, what should we do in this case? In other words, does the shomer have to pay for this pshia? So the Gemara analyzes the suffix.
And the ganav as well.
One second. Let me get through the Gemara and then you'll ask me about the ganav. Okay? I'm sorry. My mind moves slowly. Mi amrinon, should we say? Kevan did nignava bionis. As soon as it was stolen bionis, kaliale shmiraso. Okay, now what does that word kalia mean?
Terminate.
Excellent. In Hebrew it's called histaima. Histaima shmirato, which means that his responsibility as a shomer terminates the very second that it was stolen by ones. And you can imagine that I'm a very happy camper because that was the conclusion. Well, I say we, I'm using the royal we as if I'm blaming you for it, but at least that was the conclusion that I came to. Right, it's not fair for me to blame you, but because the very moment it was stolen, in this case, Belista Mizuyan, that's it. I mean, the shomer can't be held responsible for Shmira or for Shava. He's parted from Gneva Ba'ones. Oh, so now I'm happy. But the Gemara says no. O Dilma, perhaps, came under Hadra, the animal came back into his Rishus. Hadra lishmi raso, and therefore he's chayav v'pshia. Hadra lishmi raso means it goes back, his shmira goes back. But Ribbono Shel Olam, why should his shmira go back? He refuses to be a shomer. He's had it with shmira. For a month he's fed this animal, he put up fences, and burglars came in, you know, with arms, they stole the thing. He's had it. You know, I'm not interested. I gave all my kishkas here for a shmira.
You're putting words into his mouth. That obviously is not the case.
Well, again, if the Gemara, one way of learning it is to say, like you say, Michael, that's not the case. That this shomer.
That's why the Dilma.
Wait, just one second. Yeah. That in the old Dilma, the shomer was really happy to resume his shmira.
Yes.
The only question I have is that if the shomer was happy to resume his shmira, then what was the first tzad in the Gemara? Why did the Gemara think that kaliyale shmira? So he's willing to be a shomer again. Look, we're good buddies, right? We're good buddies. I was willing to be a shomer for you on the first round. I'm willing to be a shomer for you in the second round. Oh, if that's the case, then for sure he's chayav b'pshia. But yet the Gemara insists in the first side, kaliyale shmira, so meaning he can no longer be chayav as a shomer because the animal is inaccessible to him, and there's no chiyuv hashava. He's potter for the fact that the animal went into the hands, was taken, was confiscated to the hands of the ganov. So kalyulei shmirasa. Oh, Dilma says the Gemara came under hadra lishmirasa. What does it mean? Hadra lishmirasa. Does it mean that the shomer nodded his head and said, "I'm willing to reestablish myself as a shomer, except upon my, in Simchas Torah we have Hakofa Aleph, we have Hakofa Beis. So Hakofa Aleph is over, kaput, terminated, because it was stolen by onus. But now it's Hakofa Beis. Let's start from scratch. The shomer is willing to take upon himself Shmira. I don't get that impression, Michael. Again, I'm not saying you're wrong and I'm right, Chas Shalom. You know, that's not. But I'm just saying my personal take on this is that Hadra L'Shmiraso is a halacha. It's a Hadra L'Shmiraso of the original Shmira. Why? Do you understand my question?
But we saw that on the top as well.
Okay, Zev, whatever you saw, but tell me the bottom line. What's, you know what I mean? I don't want to go backwards, I want to go forward. So whatever you saw is valid, and tell me what you can say to answer my question. Why does the Gemara think that Hajra Shmirasa?
Because the fact that he was honest doesn't completely wipe out everything.
You started beautifully, but then you went off on a tangent a little bit. This is some fact here that prevents me from saying that the Kal Yashmiraso. What is it that prevents me from saying Kal Yashmiraso?
We're not taking into account the original Mafkid. Maybe Mafkid, went on an around the world trip. He had no idea it was stolen. He had no idea it came back. But as far as from his point of view, he left this behemoth there, and the behemoth's back in there, and he's someplace else. He can't.
No, I feel for the Mafkid, but I also feel for the Shomer. Meaning the Shomer says, look, the object was stolen. And it was an armed robbery. It's gneva ba'ones. I'm no longer chayev. What chayev do you have a right to impose upon me? You don't know where I'm going with this. I was hoping you would see.
It says pshia. Does that imply?
No. Pshia means that he's still a shomer, and therefore he has to provide shmirah. He decides I'm not going to feed the animal. And the animal drops dead. That's a pshia. But only it's a pshia if you say hadra. Shmiraso. Well, why Hajra Shmiraso? His first Shmira terminated.
Maybe the Shmira didn't terminate.
Why? That's what I want to know.
Because of the onus, he technically can't. The owner can't technically come and.
Wait a minute. Leave out the owner. Talk about the shomer. Technically, the shomer can't do what at this moment.
He can't,
it was stolen.
He can't do anything with it with the object that was stolen.
What does he have to do that he can't do?
He can't do the shmira now.
Shmira plus
the achrayut.
No. Shmira ultimately culminates in what? Again, the language is crucial for me. Hashava, correct? Hashava. So the shmira plus hashava. He cannot provide neither shmira nor hashava. Oh, does that mean therefore his status as a shomer terminates? I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. That's the suffix of Rav Zutte. One side is to say, look, shmira begins at a certain point and ends at a certain point. That's called kalyale shmira. So when does it end? It ends the moment that it is impossible for him to provide shmira and to provide hashov. That's the first side of the Gemara. Kalyale shmira. Says the Gemara, if it's Kalyalei Shmiraso, there's no way that you can impose on this Shomer a new round of Shmira. He's not willing to accept a new round of Shmira. It wasn't Midaito. The Ganav decided to plop it in his Ma'alivel Tzarezu. Again, as Mitch says, I feel badly for the Mafkid, but I also feel bad for the Shomer. Dilma, no. Says the Gemara, Lo Kalyalei Shmiraso, Hadra Shmiraso. There was only a temporary blockage. It wasn't that Al-Pidin he fulfilled his Hashava. It wasn't Al-Pidin that it was impossible for him to provide Shmira. It was just a physical reality that made it impossible for him to provide Shmira. If we can obviate that physical reality, if the cow would fly down from Shemayim, then why should his Shmira terminate? If there's a termination of the Shmir because the Kenyan was the original Kenyan Achrayas of the Shomer terminated, I'll give you two examples. Example number one, I take upon myself to be a Shomer for 30 days. At the end of that 30 days, my Kabbalah Shmir is batel and vutel, it's null and void. That's halachic. That's built into the Chiv Shmira. The Kenyan was a Kenyan Lizmat, it was a 30-day Shmira. I'll give you another example. Let's say the Shomer takes the object and he brings it back to the Balaam, to the Mafkin. And he says, here's, that's a halachic kinyan in which the object is transferred from the ownership, again, the ownership of Achrayus, of the Shomer, over to the Mafkin. But in this case, that's not what happened. Mashal amad dover domer. What would be in the following case? Let's say that instead of a ganav coming and stealing it from the Shomer, the lock on the corral accidentally, double locked or something, or the code was was destroyed. It was what's the word I'm looking for? Corrupted. You know what I'm talking about? Like in computers, sometimes you one of those things called the where you could store your knowledge on a little thing.
Chip.
chip or this no guy, this guy key, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have. I hope you never have this experience. My wife had this experience. Her disk on key got corrupted to the point in which it was all her information was gone. We went to the experts, Sheva experts, and they said, forget it. It's not worth anything. Everything was corrupted. Now, why that happened, I don't know. Anyway, so let's just say that situation happened in which the shomer has no access to the animal. It's completely blocked off. You know, as I say, the code got corrupted. And he can't open the corral. Would you say that would be kosel leshmiraso?
No,
it's just a temporary blockage. Right now, at this moment, the shomer is not responsible. Situations happen, it got corrupted through no fault of his own, and he doesn't have access to the animal. He can't feed the animal, he can't die. Comes along Houdini or somebody and is able to free the animal from its incarceration. And now the shomer has every possibility of continuing his shmir, and I use that word continuing deliberately because that's called lo kol solei shmirasa or hadra shmirasa.
I don't know how you can argue that.
Oh, you disagree even with
absolutely.
That case?
Yes, because...
Oh, you think his shmir is over in that case?
Because otherwise, if you're saying that it carries on, then let's say in this case, and it gets stolen by listim or whatever, then you're saying the shomer is still... A shomer, he's still responsible forever. Is that what you're saying?
Well, forever until he does hashava. Now he's not responsible because he can't do hashava. But if that technical problem, you know, that mitzius, I call it, not a din, there's no halachic person, but right now he has no access to the animal.
Yeah.
If that situation terminates, if it dissipates, then I'm back to shmira. Because he never actually fulfilled his chiyuv hashava. He never actually had a hafkas hakinyan. And if on a halachic basis he never was mafkia his kinyan and his achrayas, then right now his achrayas is in abeyance. What do I mean it's in abeyance? It's now lurking in the shadows. I can't hold him responsible during this period of time. But if the cow would fly down from heaven, then we're back to square one and his original shmira continues. When do we say, according to the second side of the Gemara, kol solei shmiraso? That's when he undergoes a halachic hashava. Something legally terminates and undermines his chiyuv achrayis. But if it's only a technicality, meaning in mechanics he has no way of providing shmira, and again he's not responsible for that situation that arose, that's called a temporary blockage. As soon as we remove that blockage, then what was lurking in the shadows now comes back in, that temporary situation terminates, and the mechanics of the Shmira, with all its halachic implications, goes back to where it was before. You can sell me a cow, and it's mine, but certain periods of time I can't use the cow. But it doesn't mean, therefore, that my kinyan is paka, even if for some technical reason I have no access to the cow. So as soon as I obviate that problem and restore the cow into my possession, then again it's mine, and my full-fledged ownership was never removed. Because to remove anything that's chal al yidei kinyan, I need another kinyan. And here there was never another kinyan. Now if that be the case, Rabosa, if you're willing to accept that hadra shmirasa means that his shmira never was terminated, it was just in temporary deep freeze, but now he took it out of deep freeze because lo and behold, the cow is back in the shomer's corral. Then what was the first side of the Gemara to say kalyulation yirosa? And the answer is that the Gemara holds that when there's a ptur hashova, the ptur hashova is not technical, but it's legal. It's not just the mechanics. It's not just the mechanics that now
it breaks the
shmira. Why? Because it's not just, which it certainly is, that technically. The shomer doesn't have access to the cow, and therefore there's no way you can hold him responsible and provide. That would be just a temporary blockage. But it's more than that. There's a halos ptur here. There's a halachic change, according to the first side in Rava. And what is that halachic change? That halachic change is a ptur. Something happened, and that which happened exempts the shomer. And by exempting the shomer, the chiyuv hashava is not just put into suspended animation, but the chiyuv hashava is completely removed. So that's what the Gemara is clearing back and forth. Mm. Do we say kolsa shmiroso because the gneva ba'onis creates a ptur, and it's a halachic ptur, and as a result of that halachic ptur, he, the shomer, for all intents and purposes, has fulfilled his chiyuv hashava. Again, not physically, but halachically, legally, he's done his maximum. He provided the best shmir you can imagine. The list of mezuzah came in, and he doesn't have to give up his life for the shmir, so obviously it's onus. That's my kiyum hashava. My kiyum hashava is identical with terminating all the shmir that it could have provided, fulfilling my responsibility, and the object is no longer my rishus. Once it leaves my rishus, I'm not chayv as a shomer. Now it comes back into rishus. So you need a new kabbalah shmirah. I never accepted with a kinyan midas a new kabbalah shmirah. Thanks, Mr. Ganim, but no thanks. I don't want to be a shomer here. That's called the shmirosa. Says the Gemara, Odil Menein, Hadra shmirosa. There's no such thing as a halachic p'tua. Right now, now here's what I wanted to ask you. Again, I'm not asking this as a halacha l'maisa question because there's no nafkamina to what I want to say now. There's no practical difference. I'm just using it as a conceptual tool. What happens if the gazlan, this list of mezuyon, would shech the animal? He would destroy the animal and eat it for dinner.
That would be cut down.
Then I think everyone would agree, kol sa shmiros. Again, I don't have a nafkamina l'maisa. It's not practical because the animal is dead already. But what I mean to say is that the Hadra Shmirasa, the second Sadin Rabba, is based on the fact that the cow still exists. It's somewhere on the face of the globe. True, the Shomer doesn't know where it is, he doesn't have access to it. But it's there. So there's a potential Chiyuv Shmira inherent in the Cheftza, in the object of the cow. Because his Chiyuv Achrayis, which was engendered by Kinyan, is chal in the gufa behema. He has kinyonim and achrayus in the gufa behema. That behema somewhere exists in the face of the earth. Who's holding on to it now? The ganav. If we get rid of the ganav, neutralize him, get him out of the picture, then that cheftza of that cow is still mechayef him in shmira. It's only temporarily suspended. That's called Hadra L'Shmirasa. However, if the Ganav went ahead and he shechted the animal, it's now Chayv Dal Vehei, right? He shechted the animal, then at that point, we're not just talking about a technical blockage, but we're talking about the fact that there's no cheft in the world. If there's no cheft in the world, at that point the kinyonim and the achrayus, the shibudim of the shomer in that object, no longer exist. Because the object doesn't exist. So what could be mechayev of the shomer and the shmir on the second round, what I call hakafa shtayim? That's only the fact that the animal was never ceased to exist in this world. So that animal always continued to engender a chiyuv hashava, as long as the animal will at some point in time be returned to the Yad HaShomer. But if that animal is completely lost, then there's nothing to engender the Chiyuv Shmir. The Chiyuv Shmir is Paka Mevela. Okay, Rabosai, let's start the Mishnah. This Mishnah, Rabosai, is made up of many different parts. And I'm telling you right up front that there's at least one part of the Mishnah that we're going to have to leave and wait till we get to the Gemara, because the Mishnah is very, very difficult. Most of the Mishnah, however, can be understood at least on a superficial level before we get to the Gemara. So that's what we want to do right now. The Mishnah says the following. There's a mafkid and a shomer. The mafkid comes to the shomer and he says, Heichon pikdoni, right? I want to get my cow back. Omar lo. So the shomer says, Avad. Okay, fine. But now there's something called the Shvuas HaShomrin. Mashbiacha ani v'omar amen. The Shomer takes the Shvuah when he says amen. And now the question is, did it really in truth get lost or not? So the Mishnah says, v'ha'edim mi'idin ososha acholo. The Edim testified that he lied and he perjured himself in that Shvuah. It wasn't lost, but he, the Shomer himself, consumed the object. In such a case, Mishalem, the Shomer has to pay, Keren, okay, That's clear because, you know, he consumed the object. But the Mishnah wants to tell us that there's a possibility that the Shomer will incur another two chiyuvim, namely Chomesh and Asham, but that's conditional upon the following. Hoda me'atzmo, if after he, the Shomer, took this false oath that it was lost, he admits that he confesses his crime, then we have a parasha in the Torah which says that if he confesses that his shvuah was a shvuah sheker, in addition to paying keren for consuming the animal, he's got to pay two other, he has to be, he'll be penalized with two other penalties. Number one, v'chomesh. So in addition to the 100 that the keren is worth, he's got to add another 20. So he's going to pay 120. The asham, and he has to bring a carbon asham, and all this is by virtue of A plus B, meaning the shvua, which was the shvua sheker, and B, the hodah, when he confesses his crime. All this is in the case where the shomer claimed avat. Then the Mishnah says, Heichan pikdoni omer lo nignav, the shomer claims it was stolen, mashbiach ha'anivi omer amen, and then he, the shomer, takes the shvua that it was stolen, va'edim mi'idin oso sheganvo, and here the testimony of two edim clarifies that he himself had stolen it, is then mishalim tashlume kefel, this is what's called toing tainis ganav v'pikadon, and toing tainis ganav v'pikadon becomes a ganav if and when he takes a false Shvua, Hoda Me'atzmo, but if he admits his crime on his own initiative, in other words, he took a Shvua Sheker, now he's Moda, he's then Mishalim, Keren, Chomesh, V'Yoshim. So basically, Keren, Chomesh, V'Yoshim applies in both cases, both in the case where the Shomer claimed Avad and in the case where he claimed Ganov, if he took a false Shvua and he confessed his crime. However, Kefel is conditioned on the fact that he put forth a claim of Ganav, he took a shvua to that effect, and Eidim testified that he was the culprit, he was the one who stole it. That part of the Mishnah is very clear to us because it's almost a repeat, it's only almost a review of things that we've learned in the past. But now we get to a whole new discussion. Now, by way of introduction, the question is as follows. When somebody steals something and he has to make amends, which means he's chayv in hashava, in certain cases he might be chayv not only in keren, but also in asham, in chomesh and asham, what happens if mechila sets in? Is there a possibility of mechila? Now, keep in mind that the Torah has organized payments and penalties, the goal of which is tshuva, is kapara, is, in a sense, if you call it, rectifying the avera. Mechila is a very strange concept in this regard. Why? Because mechila makes sense if, let's say, I borrow $1,000 from you, and you decide to be mocha, and you waive the payment. But if that payment is a kapara, then mechila is a little bit more problematic. It's a little bit more tricky. Because if this is the way the Torah designed the process, the talich of kapara, mechila is a little bit off base here, because mechila works on mammon, on a level of paying a chiv mammon back, so mechila removes the chiv mammon, but if there's kapara involved, it's a little bit more complicated. Now, if you take a minute of your time and go back to Daf Kuf Gimel for a second, if you look back in the Mishnah, the Mishnah says, if you count up from the bottom of the page on Kuf Gimel and Aleph, about I'd say 8-9 lines, it says Machalo ala Keren, velo Machalo ala Chomesh, etc. etc. is Eino Tzarch Lelech Acharav. Okay, that you may recall the whole discussion about going all the way to Madai to fulfill this Chiyuv Hashava. And that Chiyuv of Hashava to Madai is alleviated by virtue of the fact that the Nigzal was Mochel on the Karen. And the Gemara is going to derive it that Karen and Chomesh and Ashim, it's all a package deal. And once you remove the Karen, there cannot be a separate Chiyuv on the Chomesh. The Chomesh is always a tag along to the Karen. Good. But wait a second. This Mishnah seems to be committed explicitly to the viability of Mechila with regard to Karen that's going to have a snowball effect on removing the Chiyuv Chomesh and the Ashim. In other words, insofar as the Torah establishes Keren, Chomesh, and Ashim as one indivisible unit, one package, if Mechila removes, undermines the Chiyuv Keren, then the Mela, like a domino, everything falls down. Everything falls by the wayside. There's no longer a Chiyuv Chomesh, there's no longer a Chiyuv Ashim. So we already have an explicit Mishnah that is committed to the position that Mechila works even with regard to these penalties and these payments. But now take a look at our Mishnah, and I think we're going to derive the exact opposite conclusion. The Mishnah describes the following scenario. Hagozel es aviv. Very strange that the son was so desperate that he stole from his father. V'nishvalo. And not only that, he took an oath denying that he had stolen. Okay, now it says umes. Who died? The father died. Now take a look at Rashi. Rashi says that if you count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom, Rashi says the achakach mes aviv the achar misas ha'av hoda. There's a whole debate here amongst the Achronim, the Marshan, on one extreme, and the Pnei Yeshua on the other, whether Rashi really wrote this, believe it or not. According to the Marshan, it makes no sense. Because the whole premise here is that the Chiyuvim of Keren, Chomesh, and Asham emerged during the lifetime of the father. Now, the clincher to generate those chiyuvim is the hodah of the gazlan who took a shvua. It must be, therefore, says the Marsha, that hodah had to take place during the lifetime of the father. Now the father dies, and the question is, does he, the son, have to pay these penalties to his brothers, who are the Yarshim? That's going to be the issue that the Mishnah is going to address. The Pnei Yeshua is not willing to say that Rashi didn't say it or didn't mean it or there's a mistake in the text. He's going to do somersaults in the air to try to justify Rashi and say that somehow Hodah could come even after the father's death and engender the Chiyuvim of Keren, Chomesh, and Asham. But Rashi would certainly agree, and this is true according to everybody, whether it's the Marsha or the Pnei Yeshua, that if the Hodah took place during the lifetime of the father, then the Mishnah certainly would read smoothly. Rashi, according to Pesach, wants to be Mechadish that even if the Hodah took place after the Mises Ahav, nevertheless he still engenders a Chiyuv of Keren, Chomesh, and Asham. Okay, now the father dies. What happens now? Hareza Mishalim Keren v'Chomesh v'Asham libanav. Banav means his father's sons or his brothers. Oh, let's say there are no sons. Li achid, li echav. Let's say this father of his, the deceased father, has brothers, his uncles, and they now become the Yarshim. So again, we're not going to learn Yesh Nochlim here at the end of Bab Basra, but the Yesh Nochlim sets up an entire sequence of Yarshim. Who gets the first, who gets the second, who gets the third. Now, what happened over here? This Gazlan, as a result of the fact that he stole, he swore, and he admitted his crime, becomes chayav in Hashava, and Hashava means that he has to take that gzela and return it. And the returning of the gzela has to be accompanied by a chomesh, an additional 20% payment, and an asham. On the other hand, who is he paying to? He's paying to the arshin. Correct? Now, imagine the following scenario for just one moment. Let's say he is the only yorish. He has no brothers. He's an only child. Or at least an only son, I should say, right? Or even if he has brothers, but amongst the Yarshim, he's included amongst the Yarshim. So in a funny kind of sense, he is going to be paying himself. Says the Mishnah, no, he can't pay himself. Whatever payments he's obligated in, he's got to cough them up and transfer them over to his brothers or to the Yarshim, whoever they are. Now, we have to know that the Gemara later on is going to establish that this is a Chiyuv Durabana. You know, it's Midoraisa. It doesn't make sense that he has to pay to himself. He himself is the Orish. And again, as I said, he might be the only Orish. But the Rabbana required that he pay. Well, who's he going to pay if he's the only Orish? What, is he going to take it from one hand and put it to the other hand? So if you take a look, fast forward for just one moment to the Gemara, Omar of Yosef, and this is on the top of Kuftes Amid Aleph, about three lines down, Omar of Yosef, if there's no one else to receive this payment, afil li'arnike la'arniki shel tztaka, he has to cough up the money and put it into a community chest. And that's the way he fulfills his Chiyuv Hashava. Again, this is mind-boggling. How do you fulfill a Chiyuv Hashava by putting money into the Tztaka Pushka? But again, there's no other option. Because he's the only Yorish. Omar HaPop, V'tzach Yomar Zeh Gezel Aviv. He has to make a declaration that I am now returning the Gezel that I stole from my father. My father's no longer alive. There are no other Yorishim except for myself. I'm putting it into the Arniki Shel Tztaka. So the Gemara immediately asks, am I? Why does he have to pay? Why does he have to pay his brothers if he has other brothers? If he has brothers, why does he have to pay the kupa, the arniki shel tztaka, if he has no brothers? Nimcha leila nafshe. Why can't he be mochel this chov to himself? In other words, the chov is owed to the Yerusha, to the estate. Well, he himself is the heir of this estate. Let him be mochel this chov because the chov is coming to him. Milo Tnan, and if you'll tell me, wait a minute, there's no such thing as mechila on these penalties, I'll prove it to you from a Mishnah, the Mishnah that we just looked at. Because the Mishnah says, machal lo ala keren, velo machal lo ala chomesh, etc., etc., and he doesn't pay chomesh. Means the mechila on the gzela is effective. Alma bar mechila. So let's just go back to our Mishnah and summarize the following question that we have, which is the question of the Gemara. We have here a head-on contradiction between two Mishnayos. The Mishnayos earlier says that there is Mechila on Chiyuve Hashavas Gzela. The Mishnah here is assuming there's no way, no how, that there could be Mechila. And we must guarantee absolutely that he fulfills his Chiyuve Hashava. How does he fulfill his Chiyuve Hashava? Well, if he has brothers who inherit his father, he'll pay it to his brothers if there are the Yarshim. If there are no Yarshim but him, then he has to pay it to the kupa of tztaka. But in some form or another, okay, we're not sure how this, the mechanics of this arniki shel tztaka, but it's a kind of quasi hashava which the Chazal created in order to make sure that there'll be some sort of hashava in which the gazlan will achieve, you know, this, shall we say, this kind of kapara of hashavas hagzela. And it says, because again, it's a very odd situation. He stole something and he's still holding on to it. Or if he doesn't have the original object, he has its value. He's got an asset in his bank account. That's something that the Mishnah here doesn't tolerate. It can't be that he's got an asset in his bank account as a result of gzela, and he's going to be mechaper himself without any hashavas hagzela. There must be hashavas hagzela. And even though, according to the normal laws of Dini Mominus, he himself, the Gazan, could be Mochel himself, because the Chiyuv Hashavah now is to himself, insofar as he's the only Orej, no, he still has to be Mekayim the Chiyuv Hashavah. Otherwise, he's holding on to the Gzela. And as long as he's holding on to the Gzela, he can't achieve kapara. Now, the next part of the Mishnah, im eino rotze, we're going to skip for the time being. We're only skipping one line, because this next part of the Mishnah cannot be understood unless we go through the sugya. But let's just do the last line in the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Chesam in Beis. Ha'omer libno konam iata nena mishali. This is what's called a muder hanami chavero, which if we were to learn Masechta Nedarim, the Gemara Nedarim says that if I own something, I can impose upon you meaning anyone else, an Isur Neder, in which no one else is allowed to have any hano whatsoever from this object. And that's called a konam. The word konam is a carbon, correct. Now, just like I can take my animal and make it into a carbon, and as a result, it's also about none, no one's allowed to benefit from it. So too, I can create a quasi-carbon, it's not really a carbon, by saying konam with regard to my possessions. And they become asur bana through the parshin matos of Nedarim. Okay, now what happens? He prohibits his son from having any benefit from his possessions, v'meis. Now he dies. Now what's going to happen with all his possessions? In the normal scenario, his son would inherit the possessions. But how can he inherit something that's asur olav bekonam? And the Mishnah says yirashena. Why is it so? Why is it yirashena? How could he benefit from this yerusha of nechasim that are asur bekonam? And I would like to suggest two answers. Each one, I think, is a possible answer. One is that a person could create a konam on someone else with regard to his own possessions, but it always has a time limitation to it, even if he doesn't mention it, and that is during his lifetime. I cannot create a konam that would be valid even after my death, because after I die, I don't have possession over my possessions. And therefore, if the halacha of konam is based on my ownership terminates with my death. The other way of learning it is something else. And that is that in a konam situation, a mudra ana, when the other person benefits from it, his violation of that iser, of that neder, of that konam, is a result of the fact that I gave him the hana. Even if I didn't invite him to take the hanah, it's considered that he took the hanah from me. And if he took the hanah from me, like let's say for example, if there's a mudar hanah situation and I would now give this person a gift, he received that gift from me. He's benefiting from me. His connection to the hanah is through me. Not so in the case of Yerusha. Yerusha is the only kind of haknav, transfer of ownership, where there's no relationship between the makne and the kone. The makne is both symbolically and literally out of the picture. He's gone. The Yerusha happens me'elav, automatically. It's a very difficult concept to understand. If you're oriented in Dine Mominus, it's mamish mind-boggling how Yerusha operates. But the Torah is Machadish a parash of Yerusha, and it's not that the Nechasim went from the father to the son. That's impossible. There was no active, direct relationship between the father and the son. The father died. In the male, the son inherits. It's almost as if the son is inheriting on his own. And if he's inheriting on his own, then any benefits that he gets from this Yerusha are not related to the father. And therefore there's no violation of Mudr Hanna. Okay, Rabosai, at this point, I think we're going to have to try in the next 2 minutes to finish the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Bechayav ubimosa. This smart aleck tries to outsmart the Torah. And what does he do? He says, I want to prohibit my nechasim on my children or on my son with a konam even after I die? Does he have the power to do so? Can he create a konam that will extend even after his death? So here the Mishnah says, to our surprise, imeis lo yirashena, meaning the konam is valid and it applies even after his death. So in such a case, the yachzir lebanav, if let's say the konam was only on one of the children and there are other brothers, then he's going to have to cough up and forfeit his chelik of the Yerusha for the benefit of his other brothers. Or if there are no other brothers, to the uncle. In other words, he's out of the picture of the Yerusha, and whatever chelik of his Yerusha that he has to be divvied up amongst the other Yarshim. V'im Einlo, if let's say this brother doesn't have enough food to put on his table, he's going to starve to death. Lova, he should borrow the equivalent amount of money. Ubalichov, boim v'nifraim, and they'll collect his chelik in the Yerusha from the other brothers. But it, now we go back to my two interpretations. Let's go back for a moment before Mincha, and again we'll embellish this Mitzvah Shem next week. There are two interpretations to the Reisha of the Mishnah. One interpretation was that there's no Mudra Anah in this case because the father doesn't have the power to create a konam after his death. The other interpretation was that in such a case he's not benefiting directly from his father. The first interpretation is definitely wrong, incorrect, because you see clearly that if the father created this konam for Liakamoso, then it's valid. So you see that he has the power to create during his lifetime a konam on this hefta that continues to exist beyond his death. But in the first case, he didn't do so. He didn't avail himself of that possibility. He just took a konam, and the assumption was the konam is on these nechasim as long as I'm alive to own these nechasim. The second interpretation was that even if the Yarshim, in this case the son, has benefits from the object after his father's death, he's not benefiting from his father because his Yerusha is Memela. That shot can't work out either, because the Gemara says that in the Sefer, when he made a konam b'chayv uvam also, the son is enjoined from his nechasim. Okay then? Wish everyone a great Shabbos.